I'm Hugh McKay, and I'm reading a short extract from my latest book, Beyond Belief, How We Find Meaning With or Without Religion, and specifically from a chapter called Spiritual But Not Religious. Suddenly I realize that if I stepped out of my body, I would break into blossom. Those are the last three lines of a poem called A Blessing, written in 1963 by the US poet James Wright. Break into blossom? Step out of my body? We acknowledge those as purely poetic images, yet many people experience moments just like that, moments so pure, so ethereal, that they're alerted to something that seems to transcend the here and now. Such moments often seem magical, or mystical, or deeply insightful, or, yes, spiritual. And they generally stay with the person as a reference point. Here's one person's take on the idea of spirituality. There's so much to it: concentration, non-attachment, non-seeking, forgiveness of self, compassion and empathy for others, persistence, patience. You need all those things for equilibrium and a state of grace to become somehow subtler in life, attending to the nuances, which doesn't mean sitting quietly in a corner like a hermit, by the way. You have to be fully engaged. You have to be part of the life of those around you. It's really that sense of oneness. A recurring theme in people's stories of spiritual experiences is that more open, generous, and compassionate attitudes seem to emerge as a natural consequence of some spiritual experience. And the link between spirituality and compassion shouldn't surprise us. In his book Wisdom, Stephen Hall reports on the growing body of research into the sources of compassion in the human heart, having spent time in a neuroscience laboratory in Madison, Wisconsin, where the effects of meditation are being studied. Hall writes that the first neural traces of compassion have begun to appear in our 21st century measuring machines. In the neural geography of wisdom, we have even managed to locate a few places in the brain associated with loving kindness. If meditation is indeed one of the well-worn pathways to the inner life, and meditation has the capacity to stimulate compassion, then it's no wonder compassion is so widely regarded as one of the most visible manifestations of spiritual maturity.
It's not particularly fashionable to write books about philosophy these days, is
no,
it?
No, specifically religion. No, specific not religion. At all fashionable. No.
Yes. Now, why do you think that? Apart from the fact that we do live in an increasingly secular world, people don't necessarily seem to be finding that particularly satisfying. So obviously we need to re-examine spiritual beliefs, don't we? Mm. Is that what drove you to write this book?
It did. The search for meaning goes on. The yearning for some kind of meaning that will help me to make sense of my own life is undiminished, even if religious faith and practice is on the wane. But I notice, for example, in our last census, 61% of Australians described themselves as Christian. In a recent survey, 68% of Australians said they believe in God or some higher power. So that... there's been a great move away from the institutional church, great move away from religious dogma, but people are still very interested in the whole idea of religious faith and the religious values that underpin, every mystical tradition, every culture in human history.
What have you found from researching the book to sort of support the idea that people are increasingly searching still for some sort of meaning in their lives?
You hear it particularly from people who've given up going to church, and they say there's something there now, there's something missing in my life. I'm not any longer part of a community of people who are interested in these big questions, but for many of them, I'm on a spiritual journey of my own, maybe through yoga, maybe through mindfulness training or meditation or going on pilgrim walks, all sorts of things, people will say, I don't want to be just written off as a materialist. I know there's more to life than that. I do want to nurture my spiritual life. And the more I listen to people at all points on the spectrum talking about this, the more I thought the people on the religious journey and the people on the non-religious spiritual journey are all heading in the same direction. The common ground is enormous, which is people realizing that they've got to put their faith in something larger than themselves to have a sense of the meaning and purpose of their own lives. And on both ends of the spectrum, the thing that people increasingly talk about is putting their faith in the idea of the spirit of love, the idea that kindness and compassion are what builds communities, builds society, and brings us our deepest satisfactions and gives meaning to our lives.
There's been an increasing movement which suggests that the next big quality that we have to try and embrace and introduce into society is empathy, which also seems, of course, is related to compassion, because you can't have one without the other.
Yes.
And there's even schools of philosophical thought now devoted to it, particularly in universities, and there's this idea of developing empathy. Where do you think that the institutionalised religions have lost that particular connection with empathy and compassion?
Some have and some haven't. There are still some faith communities where there's a very strong emphasis on compassion, on the need to address the needs of the poor and the marginalised and so on. But the big religious the institutional church does have the same problem that all big institutions and corporations have, which is they tend to become obsessed with their own preserving their own power, protecting their own hierarchy. They become corrupted by their own power. And the more institutionalized you become, the more dogmatic you become, the more likely you are to be judgmental about people with a different point of view. So that's been a huge reason, I think, why so many people have felt that the church lacks compassion and isn't interested in them, even if they're not prepared to tick all the boxes of religious dogma. But I think there is a quiet revolution going on. I think inside many churches, many faith communities, people are thinking differently, even thinking differently about what God means, but certainly thinking differently about the need to respond to the marginalised, the poor. And all those people who leave institutional religion but set off on some spiritual journey of their own and talk about having moments of spiritual enlightenment or insight, they always say that part of that insight is to realize that we're all one, that it's not about me, it's about us, that you can't separate me from everything else on the planet. And what that leads to is a more loving, more compassionate attitude. If we're all one, then obviously if you're in trouble, that's my problem.
Which, of course, brings us round to one of the most pressing issues, I think, in Australian society, which is our attitude towards refugees and the imprisoning of refugees, because I find that the general public has enormous amounts of empathy and compassion for this, and yet we don't see that reflected in the political leadership that we have. But do you think this is just... why is there such a big divide there, do you think? Where did we get to the point where political leadership was seen to be divorced from empathy and compassion?
Well, that's right. The offshore detention of asylum seekers is a national disgrace and is an affront to the whole idea of kindness and compassion and welcoming the stranger and all of that. How did it happen? It seemed to me that political leaders on both sides of the political fence decided during a period of great social and cultural and technological and economic upheaval that a lot of people had become anxious and insecure, which is true, and that what they wanted from governments was strength. So they decided that the sign of a strong government, the symbol, will be border protection and our ruthless treatment of people who come here by irregular means. Now, the tragedy about this is that it's now gone on for so many years that many people in the community have just put it out of their minds. So I think because of leadership that lacks compassion, we have, in the short term, become a society lacking compassion as well. Not everyone. I think there's probably still 20 or 30% of Australians whose hearts bleed for the poor creatures who are effectively being tortured in our name. But most people seem to be very happy now, with the permission of leaders of both the major parties, to just put all this out of our minds.